the seventh trumpet rapture. It's the history of it. It's what's happened to it since it first came out, and why it's correct. So I hope you'll take a look at that if you have a computer, because I put it on that for that reason. Now, I know you get tired of me saying this, but I have deliberately, over the years, stuck to the time when Israel, the king of the south, would attack the king of the north, which would be the Antichrist of Greater Syria. And I've shown you many times what Greater Syria consisted of. And he's called in the Bible the Syrian Antichrist, but he's also called the ruler of Greater Syria. Now, I have stuck to that one thing because I have been extremely confident for some 38 years, extremely confident of what was going to happen at the end when Israel attacked the Antichrist across Israel's northern border, Israel being the king of the south, and the Antichrist being the king of Greater Syria. Now, the things that have been going on over there recently have let me have a great certainty in my heart that the things that are going to happen over there before that time are very plain now. And so I feel just as confident now about what's going to happen over there. I've considered everything that's going on over there now, everything that's going on in the past. I've tracked those people over there for years, different groups, and particularly Bashar Assad. And we're in a situation right now where our president is going to do all he can to set us up before the next change of administration. So I'm going to make this as plain as I can, and on Lord willing, on Sunday morning, I'm going to put something out that's real plain. I'm going to stick my neck out, because I have felt for a long time that I did not have sufficient information. It's in the Bible, of course, but I didn't have sufficient information to make up my mind what was going to happen before Israel attacked Antichrist, because I've known that was going to happen. It's been a certainty in my mind. And I've had a pretty good idea of when it was going to happen. And so I've taught that here ever since I got here. Well, about 38 years I've taught it. So I've always believed that the seventh trumpet is tied in with the two feasts, the Feast of Trumpets and the Feast of Trumpets and the feast that celebrates the coming of the Messiah. They're both tied in one with the other. And I've always believed that, so I'm going to talk about the Feast of the Trumpets. There, it starts in conjunction with the Feast of the Tabernacles, which is to be something that is be a time they really enjoy that Feast of the Tabernacles, because that's when they believe they will have a Messiah finally. And although they're spiritually blind now, I do believe he'll come to catch out believers on the seventh trumpet, which is the feast that's tied in with the Feast of the Tabernacles. I've always believed that. I've believed that since I was a young man. I was taught that when I was a young man. So I thought tonight I'd talk about that. And then Sunday morning, I'm going to lay it out just as plain can be, in written form, what I think will happen between now and the time that Israel attacks. And it's tied in with the things that are happening over there right now. I feel extremely confident of it. No one realizes any more than I do that I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I spent too long looking at this, and I've waited too long for a long time to make sure that the things I thought were likely to happen would happen. And they're happening right now over there in Israel. So roughly, here's what I speak, what I believe, and I'll make it plain on Sunday morning, Lord willing, if I live that long, that the official end of a president's term is always in the February that follows the election, general election that elects the president. So I believe that the next administration, from the time that it starts, whoever wins it, from February until it ends, and you add four to it, and so that would be the 21st, let's see, it would be the 17th, and you add seven to that, and it would be the second term starts, and it will start after the next election following that. So I'll tell you, I really believe that we have 4 years before we have a rapture and a second and an atonement. A rapture and the Lord returning after he has judged us in heaven. I feel very confident of that. And so I'll tell you on Monday morning what makes me confident about it. And I have finally settled down on this thing. I've always known what was going to happen when Israel attacked. I've known the details of it right down to the very last. Sure, I could be wrong, but I don't think so. And I don't think I'm going to be wrong on this, so I will wait until Sunday morning, and I'll make it very plain what I believe, and then we'll just wait and see. I think we've got time, and I think it would behoove every one of us, certainly every one of us, to pay particular attention to the way we live our lives and the way we give our devotion to the Lord. And I'm not telling you this because I want to look good because the attendance picks up. I'm telling you this because whatever time you've got, I don't think it's going to go past 4 years. But I do think it'll go 4 years. And I've got a reason for believing that. And so on Sunday morning, I'll tell you why. If that's time setting, well, I'm going to be guilty of it. I don't know the day, the week, the month, or the year. I can't tell that. But you'll see why when I do it on Sunday morning. I believe the memorial blowing of the trumpets is a picture of warning of God's wrath to be poured out on believers after the last trump and the Feast of Trumpets is sounded. God's wrath is not poured out on the earth until after the seventh trumpet in Revelation is sounded. It will be the last trumpet sounded before the second advent, after which the Jews will be returning to worship the Lord in the Holy Mount at Jerusalem. Now, in Leviticus 23:24, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak ye unto the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, in the first day of the month, shall ye have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, and holy convocation. Leviticus 23:32. It shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest, and ye shall afflict your souls in the ninth day of the month at even. From even until even shall ye celebrate your Sabbath. So when that occurs, it is setting up the stage for the time that follows it, which is the Feast of Tabernacles, which is to be a time of great rejoicing. It was the happiest feast of the year. And I have a strong suspicion that when it does occur, it's going to occur on the last trumpet in the book of Revelation. Now, I don't know exactly when that will be, to the day, the week, the month, or the year. You just can't tell from the way it's written. But I do know we've got about 4 more years. And I know that Israel is going to attack immediately following the end of the next administration. When it ends, they'll have another election 4 years from then. We're going to have another election right now coming up in November. And then 4 years later, we'll have another election. And when that occurs, sometime between the president that's elected and the end of the administration of the first one in the February that follows, I think that's when the actual Israel is going to attack. And I think that's when the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period are going to begin. But I'll put all that out for you. It doesn't differ from the charts I've passed out to you. I've been very confident about those ever since I first put them out. And I'm going to talk about some things that have to do with Isaiah 28 and the Feast of the Trumpets. One of the things you have to be careful about in prophecy, I think Ken will tell you this. When you get over in Isaiah, sometimes he starts off talking about the time when the king of Assyria came down and surrounded Israel, but never did conquer it. And that's in the 28th chapter of Isaiah. But all of a sudden, in the last part of that chapter, he swings around and he starts talking about the king of Assyria coming down at a later time. If you don't watch for things like that, and if you don't study the Bible intensely, and go back and look like Kenneth does, goes back and checks all that stuff out, it's very difficult to know exactly when it slips over to another era and goes back and forth to the front. Now, this Isaiah 28:11-12 is talking about when the king of Assyria came down the first time. And the Assyrians had come over, or the Babylonians, and King Hezekiah had shown them all the treasures that were over there, took them in the temple and everything, showed it to them. Well, that got all over the whole area, stuff like that always does. So when the Assyrians came down, they wanted to conquer the temple. They wanted to conquer the city of Jerusalem because they believed that's where all these riches were hid. That's where he had showed them to the Babylonians, which were after the Assyrians. And he says, "For with stammering lips and another tongue will he speak to his people." Now, this word for stammering means to stutter. And there are languages, other tongues, that when they speak with these tongues, it sounds like they're stuttering. The Hebrews have a deep guttural language. And when you use it, Ehati margishim viotai garabotai, it's nice and smooth and you don't have a lot of breaks in it. But the Chaldean language, which the Assyrians and others in that area tended to use, it sounds like you're stuttering. And another tongue. Well, the other tongue here is the language that was spoken by the Assyrians. And when they came down, they spoke to Hezekiah and to the people inside the city, to whom he said, "This is the rest wherein you may cause the weary to rest, and this is the refreshing." Yet they would not hear. Israel wouldn't listen to what God had to say. As a matter of fact, that's been true in every generation. You can call them dispensations if you want to. You can call them age of the Gentiles. You can go through it and you can show how Israel repented, went back to the Lord, and then fell off the wagon. And so this happens over and over and over and over and over again. It's happening right now. And I'm watching the things that are happening, and I'm watching them start to have bathrooms for perverts and for normal everyday people. Well, I tell you, I say from experience, that is something else. Now, I've been in a lot of foreign countries, And it's kind of embarrassing to go in there and see a lady sitting on a down on a, the floor, because they all, you, they look like long urinals, like men use, but they're used for both wee wee and poo poo. To see a woman squatted down there, and to see her, and you go on over and you gotta do something, you know, or just go outside and cry. But in any case, it's terrible. And now, that's just not right. And we've got people now that are professional liars. I mean, there's not a preacher that I know of. Well, I do know some that are politicians that they just lie their eyes out, and they don't even and you can catch them in it, and you go ahead. Now, there's some of them that don't, but most of the politicians that are preachers, I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw them. When God calls a man into the ministry, he doesn't call him into a public office. And I'm very adamant about that. And I don't have a whole lot of respect for a man who says he's called of God to preach the gospel and ends up running for a public office. I don't have much respect for him. I didn't say I didn't like him. I just don't have a lot of respect for him. Now, he says, this is the rest wherein you may cause the weary to rest, and this is the refreshing, yet they would not hear. Well, that's been going on for a long, long time. In 2 Corinthians 3:15 through 18, but even unto this day when Moses is read, the veil is upon their heart. The veil pictures something between the holy place and the holy of holies. And it's over their heart. They don't realize that the whole tabernacle was a picture of Jesus, and that the one who dwelt behind the curtain, behind the veil, was Jesus. They don't realize that. But it's there in their word, in the book. But they listen. You say, well, what does a Gentile sound like to them? Hey, Kenneth, how you doing? Good day. Good to see you again. Come on in here, buddy. Come on in here. He says, you're stuttering. To a Hebrew, you're stuttering. We don't give that deep guttural stuff. And so Kenneth makes up for it with his speed reading. In any case, but y'all are going to say, you quit picking on Kenneth. Well, I'm not picking on Kenneth. If I thought I was, I'd stop. When Moses is read, the veil is upon their heart. Nevertheless, when it shall turn to the Lord, the veil will be taken away. And they'll understand that Jesus was behind the veil. It was God. They'll understand that. You say, why not now? Well, you're going to have to ask God about that. But I think it's a lot of hard hearts and people that just don't want to know the truth. And if you want to know why a lot of people are dropping out of our churches right now, it's not because we're not making it plain. It's because they haven't grown up, and they don't want to grow up, and they don't want to be mature Christians. Because that leaves you with a lot of choices where you can't do the things you'd like to do. And there's a constant battle. And sometimes you go ahead and do them anyway. What's he going to reward you for if you don't try? A lot of people on our church roll from way back that, quite frankly, they don't go to church anymore anywhere. And once in a while, they'll drift in here at a funeral or something. And they'll tell me they're going to start coming again. And that ends that. Nevertheless, when it shall turn to the Lord, the veil shall be lifted away. Now, the Lord is that Spirit. And where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. But we all, now this liberty, I have liberty in my salvation until I learned that the Bible taught it. And that once I was saved, I was always saved. You say, well, that doesn't say that in the Bible. Yes, it does. There's liberty. And it's eternal. And he'll never leave you nor forsake you. I didn't know a whole lot about the church. You say, well, didn't you know when you were baptized into the church? Oh, yeah. But what did that mean? What did that mean? And why should I be all that interested in it? And then when God called me to preach, I had to start preaching stuff to other people. I don't like to make God mad. So I really started studying. I found out a lot of things about the church I didn't know. I found out a lot of things about the ordinances of the church that I didn't know. I could lip sync them, but they hadn't actually attached onto my heart. That's spiritual growth. And so he says, but we all with open face, beholding as in a glass the glory of the Lord. What do you think you're supposed to see when you study the Bible? The glory of the Lord. What good will that do to you? You'll take a look at yourself. You'll look in the mirror. Well, in a glass, that's a mirror. For them, it was polished brass or some type of metal. Beholding in a glass the glory of the Lord. That's what's in the New Testament. It's in the Old Testament too, but man, it just comes right out and shines right on you. And you see the glory of the Lord. Well, what do you look at? What do? You look at yourself and you say, oh my goodness, what a rat I am. What a rat I am. I don't want to know what goes on in your mind. I don't want you to know what goes on in mine. And Brother Larley put that out one day very plain to the whole class. He went over the window and looked out in the parking lot and kept standing over there and standing out. Most of the people slept in his class because he taught out of a Methodist textbook. Had a Sunday school superintendent. Most of them were asleep. Joe was dozing off, and I was sitting there, and he just kept standing there. I've told you this story before, but it had a big change and effect on my life. And pretty soon, Brother Larley turned around, and there were big old tears going down his cheeks. This man was a pastor of Antioch Missionary Baptist Church, one of the most Christian-like men you'll ever meet, Christian-like wife, and wonderful man. He was my pastor. And he looked at us all over, and I started nudging the guy next to me and nudging so I'd get him all awake because I want to hear what the man had to say. And he said, fellas, if you knew all the things that go through my mind in a 24-hour day, he said, I'd have to go hide in a cave and never come out. You feel like that? I'm your pastor, and I feel like that. You say, well, we don't want you for our pastor. Good, go get somebody to lie to you. You say, well, Brother Michael Murray, don't you try to serve? Yeah, I try to serve the Lord. I do serve the Lord. But I never forget what I am, what I was born as, what he saved me from, who lives inside me. And every time I get in trouble, I run to him right quick. And sometimes, believe it or not, I don't sin. I run to him. I know, oh boy, I used to wonder, is this, am I ever going to get to the point where I just don't try to let it go on? Yeah, I'm there. And I found a great rest. And I found a great God. He's changed into the same image, his image from glory to glory, even as by the Spirit of the Lord. And it shall come to pass, Isaiah 27:13, that in that day that the great trumpet shall be blown, and they shall come from which were ready to perish in the land of Assyria, and the outcast in the land of Egypt, and shall worship the Lord in the holy mount at Jerusalem. That's millennial reign. We're going to be here on this earth. Now, if I were not an analyst, I would have to confess to you that I would sometimes say to myself, well, how can that be the truth? But it's always the truth. I am an analyst. And I didn't become an analyst by choice. I was chosen for that. And I didn't want to be an analyst. I just wanted to be a weather observer, a weather forecaster. I wanted to keep going to school till I went through every school they had. But I didn't want to be a synoptic analyst in the National Security Agency. But some things happened. Some things happened in the Far East, unbeknownst to me. And next thing there I was, with piles of reports on my desk from spies we had over there. And on those little things, they would have 80% reliability, 40% reliability, 20% reliability. And they'd have it on that piece of paper, that paper's that high. And I have to go through there and shuffle all through it. And come out with something that fit. I did that for a long, long time. That's what I love about that book. I wish I could give some of you a brain transplant and let you know what a synoptic analyst does and how this book fits together. I don't take any credit for it, but you would be amazed. And the first time I started going through that book, I said, "Good Lord." And the first time they began to teach it at the seminary, I said, "Good grief." And pretty soon, all the Bible started tied together. And I don't mean tied together partially. I mean it tied together. You say, "Well, do you know everything now?" No. But I'm working on it. And while I'm working, I'm fighting. I'm letting the Lord, I'm letting the mind of Christ be in me. I'm running to him every time I get tempted. And I'm saying, "Lord, forgive me." And boom, it's over. It's over. Sometimes I get there quick enough, I don't even have the thought. You say, "Well, boy, you must think highly of yourself. You're a Pharisee." No, I'm just being honest with you. I'm the same rotten, corrupt sinner that God saved when I was 12 years old. But the mind of Christ has worked in me, and God has worked in me, and I don't think like I used to anymore. I'm not a child anymore. I'm not a spiritual child. I've grown. And I'm so grateful to God, I don't know any way to put it, except I'm grateful to him. I'm a small child before him. And know I'm a small child. And that's why he teaches me. I know I got a lot to learn. Have you been shown the mystery? "Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed." 1 Corinthians 15:51. Some of us are going to be sitting here in the church or somewhere else in these bodies, and all of a sudden we're going to be changed. You will hardly recognize yourself. You'll be about like Gomer Pyle. Golly, the carnal nature is changed. It's changed. You got a new nature. You say, "Well, I don't like the part about the carnal nature changing." Okay, you got a new nature. You got a new nature. He comes up, joins your soul from heaven. And boy, are you going to have a great life. You're going to have an eternal life. "Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed." 1 Corinthians 15:51. God has, is, and will cause tribulation chaos. If I didn't think we were going up until the seventh trumpet, I would just preach the dickens out of the first of the week, if that's when I thought we were going. Or if it was going to be the end of the week, I'd have preached the dickens out of that. And if I'd have thought it was going to be at the first, and there was going to be two raptures, a split rapture, I'd have preached the dickens out of that. But it's the seventh trumpet. Now, that's what I'm preaching. That's what I believe. There is a gap between then and the time that the Lord comes back with all the saints and some of the people in the tribulation period in the Negev. In the seventh, in the vials of wrath, some of them are going to be born in the day when he comes back. So actually, there are two changes separated by some 45 days. "I'm waiting for the sixth seal to open." I guess I was so excited I said to open. "Waiting for the seal to open and the trumpet seven to go up." That's what I'm waiting for. Because we got a lot of stuff to go through. And if I seem to run that in the ground, I don't make any apologies. "Are you ready for the mystery to be finished? But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel." When you read God's word, and you come across something Jesus said, or that God said, you're hearing his voice. Now you have someone write it down, but he's the one in them that's inspiring them to write it. "And when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished." Well, what is the mystery of God? The mystery of God is that particular time when time is finished, at least for us, because all of a sudden, it will sound. All those in bodies, flesh, will be changed that are saved. All the carnal natures are all the others in the graves, a new body comes up, joins with the soul, and thus shall we ever be with the Lord. That means that all the saved are in heaven from every dispensation, from every time. In other words, there are no people on earth at that time of the rapture after when they go up. All the saved are in heaven, every one of them. That's when the judgment occurs, at the judgment seat of Christ. And back here on the earth, there, the Lord is allowing the earth to be torn up. Matter of fact, I think he's doing it. Don't blame it on the devil. I think, well, the devil, I'm sure, will be an assistant, because God controls the devil. The devil doesn't control God. He says, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Up they go. And then, boom, we're changed. Are you ready for the kingdoms on the seventh trumpet? And the seventh angel sounded, there were great voices in heaven saying, now notice, the kingdoms of this world are become the kings of our Lord and his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. Okay, here we go up. All the kingdoms of God are his kingdoms, and they're special, sinless kingdoms. At that time, all, they will all be in heaven. The kingdoms of the Lord at that time will be all the saved in heaven, and they will belong to him. Down here on the earth, you got a bunch of lost people, and you've got some people in the Negev wilderness, not well, actually, that are going through the tribulation period, and they're not going to be changed and saved until the Lord returns after the rapture at the second atonement, at the atonement. All of a sudden, wham! You know what that remnant is? It's born in one day, in one second. That's when Israel is born as a nation. What are they going to do? Well, what gets saved? Their soul. What about their physical bodies? Does that get changed? They go in to the millennial reign, and they serve the Lord. And they get saved by the same grace we got saved by. And some will believe and some will not believe. But that's what's going to happen. His seven vials. Well, are you ready to be judged after the seventh trumpet? And the nations were angry. And I imagine they would be angry because they weren't taken. And thy wrath has come. Armageddon, the whole shtick of it. And the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that thou shouldest give reward unto thy servants, the prophets, and to the saints, and them that fear thy name, small and great, and shouldest destroy them which destroy the earth. That word that is used there is translated in one other place, that destroy. It can either mean morally, or it can mean actually, either one. So I choose to believe it means to destroy their flesh. But they destroyed the earth by their immorality. His seven vials of wrath come on them as we are judged. And I heard a great voice out of the temple saying to the seven angels, go your ways and pour out the vials of wrath upon the earth. Revelation 16:1. And those seven vials. Now we're going out of here on the seventh trumpet. What are we going to do? Well, I would suggest what we're doing right now. And what are the other people in church going to do? I would suggest they do it also. Now, if there ever was a time we should be faithful, it's now. Because the thing is completing itself right here in front of us. That's why I waited so long. I wanted to be sure that I didn't pick the wrong time to put those events in, and I wanted to put them out right. Now, let me tell you what I think is going to happen. I don't know who's going to win the election. From a prophetic standpoint, I think it will be whoever God wants to win it. In my opinion, Trump will win it. But that's just my opinion, and I will tell you right now, I am very poor at this because I'm usually wrong. But regardless of who wins it, this next 4 years, from the time the next administration takes office in February of next year, we're going to have a tremendous increase in the things that the Bible said would occur in Isaiah 29 and 6. We're going to have a great increase in earthquakes. We're going to have the Antichrist arise in Syria. The Russians are not going to trust Bashar Assad. We're not going to trust Bashar Assad. And his sponsor, Iran, won't trust Bashar Assad. Nor will Hezbollah. Nor will Hamas. He's going to be replaced. Will he come from ISIS? I don't think so. Because their religious views are so horrific, so ungodly. Now, the others have ungodly things too. They're fanatical. But they have a spirit of being able to cover it up a whole lot better. I lived among them, and I know them pretty well. I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw them. And I've personally had meals in their homes. I've worked with them. I've taught them in different types of things while I was over there. And regardless of who wins this next election, you're going to see all these things gradually increase. When I wrote Tribulation Triad, preachers thought I was crazy. But I warned them that the first three seals had already been fulfilled, and the fourth one was opening. I put it in the book, and I made my case, and I even showed them charts, diagrams that fit perfectly. And now we're in the fifth seal. Well, they don't say much anymore. They don't have any criticism whatsoever anymore. Because if you look at what's happening around here, we've got to be in the fifth seal. Okay, when is the sixth seal going to open? Well, let's start off where we are right now. We're heading toward June. We've got about a little over 6 months left. Well, to the election. We've got till the election in November. You're going to see the same old. You're going to see a man come out of this confused mess in this Syrian conflict, and he's going to be a charmer. And he'll be just as vicious as anybody else. But he'll have a way about him that will cause things to settle down. And that's going to happen. I think that all the nations that have an interest in that area are crying out for peace like they never have cried out before. I think that's what's happening right now. And I think you're going to have a time when the United States and Russia and China and France and Great Britain all get together with the United Nations. And they finally get a plan over there that they all can accept. And it's accepted by Iran. It's accepted by the terror groups, probably not ISIS, but I just say probably not ISIS. I think we're going to hit ISIS pretty hard. I think all this glitter that we've been passing out, I think whoever wins that election is going to have to hit them hard. And I think we're going to have to put more troops over there. When that happens and ISIS is out of the way, then you'll see the real Antichrist arise out of that maze of confusion in Syria. And he'll be backed by the Iranians, Hamas, Hezbollah, Russia, China, the United Nations, and we'll be the only ones that's not backing him. So things will calm down over there. And Israel, the Jews are not fools. And when that happens, Israel will know exactly what he's going to do, and they won't trust him far enough to throw him across the street. And so, as the king of the south, Israel will attack. When will they attack? Well, not during this next administration. But when the next administration, the next elections occur, if you consider that the end of that administration, I'll give you a time that I think it will occur. I think after the next election, not the one that's now, but after the one that follows, whoever gets this one, between the time of the election and whoever wins it, and February of the following year, you will see Israel attack. You will see Israel attack. And you will see the conflict of 1,335 days begin. So, for those of you that are young, I'm happy to tell you that you got some time left. I believe that. But if you try to take advantage of that because this stupid preacher told you, God's not going to let you off the hook. So, because you need to be faithful in church. You've had your parents raise you. They've taught you the importance of it. You need to recognize that importance. And you need to put the church first in your life. That's where you need to put the church. Now, to what degree you put the church in your life is going to determine what portion of the inheritance, how much, what rewards you receive of the inheritance when you go into heaven. And I'll guarantee you, when you get up there, you'll just be thanking God from the depths of your soul the whole time you're up there that he advised you of this through his word. And if you can't see that this stuff is coming together, you may not agree with my teaching here, but if you can't see that this thing is coming together, and at least we're not too far off, you better think again. And I would advise you, if you're not in a church that teaches and preaches what that first New Testament church taught, I would advise you to join it. And I'm doing that as a friend and as somebody that loves you, because it matters how you observe the ordinances. It matters how you were baptized. It matters the church that you're in serving him when he comes back. So if that's putting pressure on you, I'm guilty. But it's something that we really ought to think about. I just thank God that he's taught me what he has. Because every time the devil comes after me, God's given me an answer. And every time he came after Jesus, the son had an answer. Well, I am a child of the firstborn who was the son. And he's given me a lot of answers. And I'm ready for a whole lot more. Because if we can't answer him with the word of God, whoever we're trying to talk to about it, what good are we as people if we don't know the word? Robert, would you dismiss us?